Hello.
Hi, Marcel. We're good to go.
Great.
All right. So let's start with your year of graduation, including that was spring, summer, fall, and your major or majors.
Sure. I graduated, when did I finally finish? Summer of 2009. I studied performance as a bass player.
Good. Bass principal instrument. Stand
Yep.
up, guitar, both.
Electric. Only electric.
Cool. And all right, so we will get to your history later, but for now, tell us about your current job. What do you do? Where do you do it?
My current job, I am what's called an implementation engineer at a medium-sized software startup called Sailthru. It's a software development role. Basically, we do marketing personalization. Let's say you go to eBay and you look at something, and an hour later you get an email saying, "We know you check this thing out. Come back and buy it." That's what my company does. So I build tools to facilitate companies, not eBay, but like eBay, e-commerce and media clients, doing marketing communications.
So stuff that, let's say, automatically detects when people look at the websites and automatically shoots off those messages, or
that's a small part of it, but probably the easiest example, that most relatable one that happens to us all constantly.
Got it. So you said your company's name is Sailthru.
Yes.
About how big is Sailthru in terms of number of employees?
We have about six offices all over the world, and I want to say there are maybe 200 of us between those six.
And you're in the
New York City.
You're in New York?
Yep. Yes.
Yeah. Got it. And about how big's the New York office?
I want to say 140, 150.
Gotcha. How many of those are implementation engineers?
Two.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a pretty specialized role. It's interesting. But basically every time we sign a new client, so someone comes on board, it's really one of the two of us who's dedicated to, wiring them up with our system, making sure everything's running smoothly.
Got so you're I get it. So in other words, when the sale is made, it's more complicated, I imagine, than those little click, 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 like when us home users install software. So you make sure after the customer's paid a lot of money that your stuff is actually working the way it was designed to.
Correct. Yep.
Got it. Do you mind sharing, how big is the typical job for you? You know what I mean? Like, in terms of, do you handle three of these a day? Do you handle one every 6 months?
It's pretty interesting in that it varies so much. And you'll see that really based on whatever our client's technical resources are. If you have someone very big, an enterprise-level media client, they tend to have a lot of software developers on their side who are familiar with what's usually a much more complicated setup that they would have. And they tend to handle things mostly on their own. I want to say we have maybe 9 or 10 new clients being implemented at any given time, but I'm really asked to pick up very specific tasks along the way that their development team can't get to. Once in a while, I'll have a tremendous bill that eats up 2 weeks of my time, and I don't do anything else, but that's fairly rare.
Got it. So I think I heard it sounds like you work a lot with the engineers at the company, at the client's company. And does this sound almost like – it sounds – you'll probably be really annoyed when I say this. It sounds almost like you're a high-level customer service or customer support. Like a technical support, that is.
In that we – that is really a large part of what I do. It's interesting in that it's a fairly even split between advising clients and scoping projects for them in exactly that role and just doing hands-on coding activities.
Got it. So when you say hands-on coding activities, What sort of activities, this for your own company software, or is this like going into the customer's systems?
It's within our own company software. I would say clients tend to have code that they hand us, whether that's code to render an email or to sign users up to the site. We have a proprietary scripting language, a programming language that we use to integrate that into our system. So, it's a combination of occasionally I will build web pages for our clients to handle, services within our system. A lot of times it's using our own in-house scripting language to make sure everything's pointing in the right direction.
Got it. I'm a little bit curious in terms of how your company bills the clients. Like, are you billed out like a lawyer, like at a per hour, or is it more like the other companies paid the software and it's your job to make it work, and in the ideal world, that takes no time at all?
Well, we are a consider ourselves a software as a service company. So we really sell a license. And so clients will sign a contract that lasts anywhere from, 1 to, let's say, 3 years for a certain amount each year. And that includes not only use of our services, but, technical support from a customer support team that's sort of outside of my department. The interesting thing about my group is that we professional services, the project managers and engineers who are, tasked with implementing new clients, we have a mandate to be independently profitable. So we tend to say that our time is worth about $250 an hour, and then set, metrics. We try to track our efficiency based off that, but it doesn't necessarily always dictate the price of any contract.
Sure. So independently profitable, meaning that, well, you shouldn't be spending too much time in any one customer.
Well, independently profitable in that we yes. I mean, it really depends on, what the amount of professional services help, implementation help that they've paid for as part of the contract is.
Sure.
Yeah, but not to give away too many hours for free. Let's say that.
Sure, no, that totally makes sense. Your job is to get it working.
Course.
And sure. Hey, do you mind like zooming in and I don't know, through a kind of a medium size implementation? Get not ask for proprietary secrets. Do you mind sort of taking us through like the whole process from start to end of all the things you do for the customer?
Sure. My team, the project managers on our implementation team, tend to do a lot of the heavy lifting. Our clients do that again themselves. Generally, we have to migrate our customers over from whatever their existing email system is, whether that's Salesforce or ExactTarget or any number of other things. We have to transfer all of their users, all of their mailing lists, all of their customer data into our system, and then from there get actual email assets, email templates, their web pages, their graphics into our system. It's sounds simpler than it generally is, and there
Sure.
million quirks to all of those things, depending on, how different services organize their information versus the way that sell-through does it, based on whatever a client's specific use case tends to be or wants to be within our system. The parameters of that implementation can vary really dramatically.
Okay. Got it. So, and can you talk a little bit about, like you said, about half your time is in this direct implementation for the customers, and the other half is for other sort of coding. What sort of other coding do you do?
I want to say a good amount of my time within the last several months has been building tools to sort of make certain tasks easier for our project managers or our clients. Let's say you're a media company, you have 200 different emails that you send out to people, and all that code is, you know, in one account, and really there's no efficient way within our system to bring all of those files into another account. So, you know, I would spend, let's say, a week kind of discovering that that's a problem, building a tool to just migrate everything in one button press, testing that, getting feedback from the people using it, trying to refine those. I mean, that's a pretty reasonable representation of some of the coding work I do here.
Got it. So internal projects that you do little upgrades. Very cool.
Yep.
And when you do those, are you working on your own?
Yes.
Gotcha. Yep. Gotcha. Okay. I'm sure it varies, but about how many hours a week do you work?
40. About 40.
Very cool. And to qualify for these interviews, one of the criteria you have to hit is that you enjoy what you do. So what is it about being an implementation engineer that you enjoy?
Well, I think there's a good amount of practical problem solving that comes with not only software development in general, but specifically what we do here. You know, every piece of software, every system has its, it is for better or worse, a living, breathing thing that changes over time, that is updated to keep current or to have new features or to make certain things easier or harder for the user. It's really interesting having so many people, different clients come in with different goals for the same, you know, set of tools, you know, with it, their various quirks. So it's, you know, it's more than sitting down in front of a screen and just running tests over and over. It's a very, very human, very practical thing.
Gotcha. All right. Very cool. Well, hey, let's take it back to the summer of 2009, and we can go back further if you wish. I mean, guessing you weren't thinking software engineer. Could be wrong.
I was not, no.
So, why don't you sort of put us in your headspace and what you were up to at that point, and then we'll go like one step at a time from where you were then to where you are now.
Sure. Summer of 2009... I had just returned from my first touring contract. I played guitar, actually, for a production of the Broadway show Bye Bye Birdie, sort of in advance of a revival of it.
And by the way, you did say you graduated in summer 09, right?
Yes. Perfect. Yep, I took some time off to – I deferred a semester to a tour, came back and finished that summer.
Gotcha.
And headed out again, doing more guitar for another show immediately after. And that was really the goal. I wanted to be on the road and
the theater.
It was something that I fell into.
Gotcha.
You know, I would have preferred to be out with a band, and I think I got farther along in my career, and I started noticing people say, the theater thing is a little bit better because you sign a contract for 8 or 9 months at a time, and, you know, the money's consistent. You know, if you're doing artist tours, you might have 3 to 6 weeks of your time spoken for, and then you have to come home and find something else to do.
Gotcha.
So it turned out to be fairly lucky. After a couple tours, I moved to New York and, you know, did the same thing that it seems like everyone does out of school, just trying to build a community and make your connections and put yourself through the freelance grind.
Can I ask what made you sort of stop the touring thing? Do you just feel a couple tours was enough? It's a rough life.
Well, I was working for a really terrible company. it's they put together a really difficult itinerary for their performers. And it wasn't until several years later that I learned that there was a legal limit for drivers of commercial passenger vehicles. And it was, I think it's something, it's 600 miles or 10 hours in any day or 60 hours over any 7-day stretch. And we were running just wildly in excess of that.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And so I was just eager to go do something else and maybe establish myself and work up to a better tour.
But frankly, there's lots of theater in New York as well as lots of other music.
Yeah, and it's been a good career doing that so far, too. I moved to New York. I eventually started doing theater down here, a lot of off-Broadway stuff. I had a teaching studio I was teaching just private bass and guitar lessons for a few years. And,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Did you just decide to set that up on your own?
There are a few guitar schools in the city that operate out of office buildings in Midtown. The business idea is sort of the same, that you can catch a lot of people on their way to or from work or on their lunch break. It was very different than, I think what most people think of teaching as at some point, where you have a bunch of middle or high school students learning to play an instrument. Mm-hmm. And the median age of my students there at this company was about 30, and it was a very specific profile. They were all accountants or lawyers or marketing people who said, I did this thing and I'm sort of happy at my job, but I want to try something new, and they take guitar lessons.
Okay, cool. And you said you were working for a company.
Yeah.
Of your own. Yep.
Yep. And after a few years of that, I ended up back on the road. I spent 3 years playing bass for a tour of Mamma Mia, right as it was closing on Broadway, which was a great company, great contract. Really got to see a lot of the world and a little bit of the world, a lot of America.
Can you orient us back to sort of what dates are we talking? Is this like 2011 to 13 or?
I was out on the road with Mamma Mia from 2013 to 2016.
Okay, so far you're living the musician's dream here. Couple tours, right? By the way, when you were doing the teaching, was that like the main thing and the occasional gig on the side, or was the teaching the side thing?
The teaching was the main thing.
Yeah, but then you go out on tour with Mamma Mia for 3 years. I mean, that's great.
I had a great time. I loved it.
So you're not doing that anymore, at least to the large extent. So here we are, 2016. So far, very classic music career, and you and I wouldn't be having this conversation. So what happens then in 2016?
2016... 2016, I think, life just caught up with me. I had a fiance, and now I have a wife, so mm-hmm. that went well. But, she was a performer as well. We never saw each other. I really didn't, I felt like I was having a hard time, just having a community of people around me. You spend that much time on the road, you never really see your family or anything like that. So I came home and decided that I was just ready to do the New York thing again. I spent about a year doing that and trying to, get networked back into everything I was doing when I left. And it was hard. It was unpleasant. You leave and life goes on without you. Of course. So one of the things that happened during that time is I noticed that there were a lot of my colleagues, even especially people that I was classmates with at Berkeley, that were starting to do coding boot camps. And there were these 12-week programs where you'd go and learn web development or some technical skill. And I'd done a lot of that as a teenager just for fun, but never really considered doing it seriously. So I looked into this and I noticed that, you know, my friends weren't just successful and, you know, they were comfortable and still gigging a lot. They were pretty happy with their day jobs. And so I gave the boot camp a shot. And
was there a specific friend who sort of convinced you to do this, or just kind of observing a lot of them and figure you?
There was one in particular who I kept in close touch with, yeah.
Was that a Berkeley person?
Yep. Yes, it was.
Very cool. And what was the name then of this boot camp?
General Assembly.
Oh, I've heard of them.
Yeah, I think they're the biggest one out there right now. They were one of the first, certainly.
Okay, so you're like, so what are we in, like the fall of 2016?
We are in the spring of 2017.
Got it. So you go to this thing, 12 intense weeks, eh?
Yeah. You can't really have a job during that time, so I was still freelancing as a musician the whole way through. I don't think I slept until at least July. Jeez. So the program wrapped up, and it was pretty jarring because, you know, I'd never done the job hunt thing before. I just played music, and you kind of network your way into work, and people know you and trust you, and that's easy enough. So getting out of the program was a wildly different experience than going in, because I suddenly realized I really knew nothing about LinkedIn or just how a business operated in the most basics.
Sure. You know,
I could build you whatever you wanted, but there was a fairly steep learning curve. So I spent the 3 or 4 months after that freelancing as a web developer and just interviewing relentlessly until I...
Can I ask how you got your freelance jobs?
Yes. The cohorts, the classes at General Assembly try to get students to do internships. And they'll find small businesses around the city, other startups that are looking for design work or development work. So what happened was that I ended up building a bunch of things that their design students had built during their own internship.
Okay. So, got it. So still like General Assembly people who were then hiring you to do this?
Yes. Yep.
Very cool. And then it sounds like you were just sending out lots of applications.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got it. So is this your first job that you landed?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Got it. And do you recall, like, how did you get this job specifically? Like, was there a specific website you looked at? Was there a connection?
General Assembly itself tries to partner with a number of engineering firms or, you know, software companies around the city to, you know, at the very least bolster its own job placement numbers, but provide their students opportunities to find that first gig. So this was a direct connection that GA had with my current employer. They posted a job with us, and I happened to be the one who got it.
You applied, interview, got it.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So that's like, what, the fall of 2017?
September 2017.
Very cool. So it's been, what, about 8 months or so?
Yeah, geez, that flew by.
Well, very nice. And here you are.
On the other side, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right, let's move on to the third part of the interview, 3. So my first question for you, and there's no right or wrong answer, is that these days, like let's say the last few months, what, if anything, is your current relationship with music?
Very involved. I still play three or four nights a week. I really did not sacrifice my gigging schedule whatsoever.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Sell-through prides itself on being a results-based work environment. So, and this is true of a lot of software development. They want to see you get things done. Thankfully, my employer has been very forgiving about me taking days here and there to step out early to go do a show or take a day off entirely to do a session. It's not been a problem.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, my wife works in software, and you're right, it's often very results-oriented, right? They care that this thing happens this week or something, but you usually don't have to be there at this exact moment, 9 to 5.
Right, so exactly.
That's a plus. Can I just ask, like, the circuit, what sort of gigs you do? Are these bands you're in? Are you a sort of sideman or
it's a lot of sideman stuff. I've had a few short runs of off-Broadway shows come up. I've been fortunate to slowly make the jump from subbing and GB and wedding and cover stuff to just being a full-time member of a few things around the city. So it's been a lot of covers lately.
Gotcha. Cool. All right. So next question I have for you is that, let's see. Thinking of yourself now, obviously you're still gigging. Hey, that's great. And I'd say it's a little under a fourth of people who are really heavily involved with music like you are, who I speak with. But very cool. Let's say, putting that aside, thinking of yourself, Marcel the implementation engineer. And thinking back to your Berkeley experience, let's say you would have gone to college somewhere, but relative to going to some random liberal arts school or state school, is there anything you feel your Berkeley experience did particularly well to prepare you for what you're doing now?
That is a great, great question. I think there are two things that I could name off the top of my head. The first is that the process of meeting so many musicians so rapidly and being forced to create something with them is very, very analogous to dealing with clients as I do now, where everyone has their own backgrounds, their own understanding of how things work on their end, how our product works. It really puts you in a position where you're facilitating a lot of these things very rapidly, and it happened to be a very useful skill. I think probably more so especially in the tech industry, you are always learning something new. The tools of your trade change, faster than I think any of us would like.
Sure.
And as such, you have to constantly figure out how something new works. And the same is largely true of being in music, and was true of studying at Berkeley, where there were so many unfamiliar styles or ideas that you had to pull into your repertoire as quickly as you could to make a certain thing happen. And that really set the pace for, the rest of my career and everything that's led right up to what I'm doing right now. That's been a constant that definitely began there.
Yeah, that process of having to learn new things constantly.
Yes, and not shying away from it. The definitely building a habit of just diving in and experimenting with something until you figured out what you were doing.
Very cool. All right, well, hey, let's turn that question around now, because Berkeley gives that one degree, a bachelor's in music, and you went there knowing that. Mm-hmm. But all that said, when you look back to your Berkeley education, is there anything where you say, hey, it would have been really useful to have learned this when I was at Berkeley, and they could have taught it to me, and they didn't? Anything missing or incomplete?
What's interesting is that probably this was a very common sentiment when I was there, that the very best course that you could take was taxation in the music business. And that was probably the closest to a real life skill that any of us left with. I feel like there could have been a few things that changed. For one, probably the biggest is just more prerequisites based on the business end of the industry. Mm-hmm. That would have been great, because I think that the prevailing sentiment when I graduated was that we all got out and everybody sort of realized at the same time that we had no idea how to do anything in the real world. We're dropped in. We had never paid rent. I had never had a kitchen. I didn't know how to have a real job, or, you know, what a lease looked like. You know, and those were not things that colleges are necessarily responsible for, but there are some very basic economics that I wish I had left more familiar with that I did not.
Okay, so you're talking both the music business in general, those, let's say, life skills.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to put Berkeley on the hook for life skills, but I could have.
Why not? You're people graduating in your situation, right?
Sure, but, you know, there's definitely a level of business savvy that I would have appreciated leaving with, and that I knew the school offered, but there was nothing that was required. I thought there was an overemphasis at some point on jazz. Mm. That, I think, in purely musical terms, you know, I certainly understand the mindset that you can play jazz, you can mm-hmm. play anything, but it is really not all that reflective of what any of us did when we left.
Sure. Sure. Is that it?
I think that's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you don't let me stop you if there's.
Sure. No, that's all I got.
Cool. All right. So my next question for you is, like, you know, you had a pretty good music career. Few ups and downs for a while until, as you say, it was kind of hard to get back into it. And you're like, hey, this, you know, you wanted to be stable in New York with your now wife. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And then let's say once you figured out that, hey, this tech thing seems pretty cool, it all happens pretty quickly, right? You did this 12-week intensive course followed by what, a 1 to 2 month job search?
It was about 4 months.
4 months, okay. Still, barely sure. Over half a year between when you start the program and when you get your job.
Sure. You know, there was plenty of work ramping up to that as well. You know, I had sort of had this idea, and I'd started looking into coding and trying to teach myself to prepare. I want to say it was closer to a year that I spent working on this stuff before I found...
Oh, you did a bunch of self-study first, you're saying.
Yeah, I did. Cool. Yeah.
Right. No, that's good to know, and it's also good, so in hearing this, to realize that, yeah, it helps to, like, prep yourself first, not just, like, be like, hey, I'll walk into a boot camp. What's this computer thing?
Right.
So, okay, cool. Point is, you know, at some point you were like, okay, I think I want this new career path. Took some real work there. I don't want to make sound like you flipped a switch and there you are. But in relatively short time, you got the education you needed. And then, you know, after a little while of freelancing, you got this job. Sounds like a great job.
I've been happy, yeah. And it is a remarkable turnaround time, given what people usually go through.
So... Let's say not everyone has found their career path. Maybe they're recent grads who, you know, are having a hard time getting connected in music, or, you know, kind of wondering if this is really what they want to do. And also there are, let's say, people in their last year at Berkeley staring out into the world and being like, oh my God, what comes next? So for either or both of those groups, what advice do you have?
Being in the situation you are as a new or recent graduate, you owe it to yourself to just try as many things as you can. I think if I could look back in the final moments of my Berkeley career and the time that immediately followed, I wish I had known that I did not actually have any mandate to succeed immediately. That what you probably should be doing is going out into the world and failing at a lot of things to figure out what you actually are doing and what you actually want to do. That is it. You have to really embrace the position that you're in, and that position is one in which you can accept a lot of risk without much consequence. You have a lot of freedom to try any number of things, and you should.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Very cool. All right. So, hey, let's focus in a little more.
Sure.
I'm still trying to decide whether to put you under implementation engineer or throw you into a technical support engineer or have someone else there. But you have any preference?
I'll take implementation.
Okay. Fair. So, I guess my point is that, like, in that case, you're my first implementation engineer, and I think my 127th interview.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, I don't think anyone's listening to all 127. But someone who's like, oh, hey, implementation engineer, hey, what's that all about? Right? Those are the people who are listening to this.
There are so many bizarre names for it. I think if you want to classify it as something, I wasn't aware that this division existed in any company before I was hired into one, and it's professional services.
Oh, so you're considered professional services.
That is the department. I would say that technical support is a little more reactive, where people come to you with a problem that they may have.
Got it. Whereas you're part of the package.
Yes.
That makes complete sense. Great. Point being, right, that, you know, someone listening to this is probably the person who said, hey, implementation engineer, let's see what that's about. And so it is hearing this at this point in the interview is going like, hey, this sounds pretty cool. You know, seems like a technical field that, at least based on your example, one could get into relatively quickly. There's some working with people. There's some problem solving. Hey, this sounds pretty good. I'm interested. So for someone who might be interested in pursuing this as a career, do you have any specific advice for them?
Yeah, I think it's really easy, thankfully, in 2018 to figure out if you have an aptitude for code or if you like it at all. There are so many good free resources that will teach you the basics of, you know, anything from databases to building a website to, you know, doing some sort of tricky algorithmic stuff. You can go to Free Code Camp or Code Academy or, you know, any number of sites and just go through a self-guided course. And if that sort of problem solving is fun to you, then you can keep going down that road and really be in a good place to start your journey there.
All right. Very cool. Well, hey, I only have one last question for you, which is, you have the mic. Is there anything we missed? Anything else you'd like to say?
Oh my goodness, no, I think this is you asked all the right questions, Kevin. I never thought I would be on record talking about what I would have changed about my college career, but here we are, and I think I got it all out. So, thanks for the soapbox.
Well, sounds good. Well, in that case, I really enjoyed this conversation. Look for a message from me in the very near future.
Will do.
All right. Best of luck. Hope every implementation goes smooth as silk.
Thanks so much for taking the time to speak.
Sure. Have a great day.